springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Did you know there were over 1 million bubbles in a glass of champagne? Did someone say brunch?
Leave the egg hunting to the kids. We'll have even more fine hunting for your brilliant brunch Riesling.
Ham's sweet and salty richness pairs perfectly with sweeter wines with bold fruit. How about a juicy Pinot Noir?
Whether you're hosting or just bringing the wine, we love to share our always low prices and ridiculous selection this spring at Total Wine & More. Cheers!
Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WJLA 7 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Automated vehicles. Well, is that something for the future or is it something for right now? Well, there are cars being introduced that actually drive themselves. Unfortunately, there was a tragic accident recently in Arizona where a woman was hit and killed by a driverless vehicle. Now, we're going to talk about the concept, how they work, and what it means for the future of safety of drivers and passengers and property. So my guest today is Mark Scribner. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he focuses on transportation regulation. Mark, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for having me, Shirley.
Now, this is a very fascinating subject, and we do have a car that's got, it's about 4 years old, but it is a, I'm not sure how to describe it, it kind of drives itself, but you have to keep your hands on the steering wheel, but it starts and stops and follows traffic and follows the lines in the road and all that sort of stuff. Makes me a little nervous sometimes, but I love it, basically. So let's talk a little bit about the technology that goes into these vehicles. And as I said, our vehicle is older. The newer vehicles, let's take the case of the Uber in Arizona. What happened there? Do we really know?
Well, the details are still scant on the Arizona, the fatal crash there. But what we do know and what we can judge based on video that has been released and also just the fact that the incident occurred is that something went wrong with Uber's self-driving system. It should have been able to, if it was working as designed, to have detected that woman before she stepped in front of the path of the vehicle. So and what we've seen so far, based on the limited video that we've seen, it doesn't look like the test driver who was present in the vehicle was even aware that someone had been hit until after the accident had occurred. So something went wrong. The technology is designed to prevent precisely this type of thing. So it'll be interesting to see what the crash investigators make of all of it.
But there was somebody in the car, but this person wasn't actually in control of the vehicle. Is that correct?
Well, that person, the safety driver, is supposed to be monitoring the road conditions at all time and to take over in the event of a system failure. They didn't do that, and it appears they may have been distracted. The video from the interior of the car immediately prior to the accident shows the safety test driver averting their eyes from the forward movement of the car from the windshield and looking down at something. So it appears not only did the self-driving system fail, but that the backstop safety driver also wasn't behaving as they were supposed to behave.
So will that person be held any liability there? I mean, that's a legal question. You probably can't answer it, but do you have a sense?
Well, the liability here is, so as far as civil liability, Uber has already settled for an undisclosed sum of money with the victim's family. As for criminal, I think in part because the woman who was killed was crossing outside of a designated crosswalk, and therefore the Uber vehicle had the legal right of way, that there probably won't be criminal charges brought against the safety driver or against Uber, but it's still too early to say based on what we know of the investigation and where it could potentially go.
So there was some culpability on the part of the pedestrian, and I don't mean that to take away from the tragedy, but if you're crossing outside the crosswalk, that could be a problem. But okay, so the car didn't stop. Now, one of the things that I think that concerns the Competitive Enterprise Institute is the fact that I believe, isn't Arizona about to pass some laws that would hamper the use of automated vehicles?
The legislature is looking into that, but Arizona, until this incident, had been trying to contrast itself with high regulation states like California that impose a lot more burdens on testing companies for this type of thing. But I think it's important to note that in high regulation states such as California, much of the regulatory system, in terms of the responsibilities put upon these testing companies, it's mostly about reporting. So it isn't clear that any existing regulatory framework out there would have prevented this type of accident.
And that's exactly what it seems to me like it was. Okay, so let's talk about the technology that's involved here. Clearly, it's recognition. I know in our vehicle, one of the things that I've noticed that you have to pay attention. And that is, it does not know how to recognize a stoplight, a red light, unless there's a car already in the lane. So if you're barreling down the highway and there's a red light up ahead, our vehicle does not know that there's a red light there. Now, has that technology improved so that it would recognize there's a red light even though there may not be a vehicle stopped there?
Well, in some of these prototypes, so if you're looking at Uber, if you're looking at a number of the automakers who have their advanced self-driving prototypes, or if you're looking at Waymo, which was formerly the Google self-driving car project and is probably the most advanced out there, they do have the technology to identify and classify things like stoplights and respond accordingly. But the technology, the lower-level automation technology, such as lane keeping assistance, adaptive cruise control, things that are in production vehicles available to purchase from a dealership today, those don't have that capability. And it's unclear if automakers are going to phase in that level of technology, or if they're going to try to jump from that, maybe the kind of the middle of these tech capabilities to something more advanced, precisely because you still need to have human beings monitoring this at all times, mm-hmm. and there's a risk of people becoming too comfortable and overly reliant on these technologies when they're not meant to take away human time on task of driving.
Yeah, this guy, and of course in our car you certainly have to be on top of it, and it requires you to keep your hands on the steering wheel, which is another thing. You get this nasty little warning and red light and beeping if you don't. So you know that you're being bad. If you take your hands off the steering wheel, you're going to get notified. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Mark Scribner. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and his focus is on transportation regulation. And we're talking about self-driving or automated cars, whatever you want to call them. Is self-driving a wrong term?
Well, self-driving is appropriate when you're talking about the high levels of automation, such as what was the Waymo vehicle, which was formerly Google. Mm-hmm. Then I think that's an appropriate term. But when you're talking about even things like the Tesla Autopilot, mm-hmm. which also recently saw another fatal accident, I don't think self-driving is not appropriate because in those cases the human drivers are supposed to be monitoring the technology at all times.
Okay. One of the things that I've noticed on our vehicle also, it becomes rather interesting when you approach a off-ramp and there's no line on the side of the road to guide the car. I believe that the technology that our car has is it recognizes the lines on the side of the road, and that's how it keeps you in the lanes. Do you know enough about some of the technology? Is that one of the ways they work?
Yeah, looking at lane markings, having an optical analysis of the lane markings as the vehicles going down the road is a way, a common way for self-driving vehicles to recognize its position within the roadway. Now, they're doing a lot more than that. A lot of these testing companies have been manually mapping areas, in part because our municipal public works departments, state highway departments, are not always, pushing maintenance first. So you may have degraded roadways that could trick the sensors. So there's been a lot of work done by these companies sort of picking up the slack where our public road managers have sort of failed. And that's actually an important point. One of the most important things that the government could be doing to usher in this technology is just to maintain the roads that we already have in a state of good repair. So it doesn't require a lot more new infrastructure. Rather, maintenance should be at the forefront of every municipal public works department and highway department if they want to see this technology deployed.
I think the interesting thing, though, is when you approach an exit off of the road, there is generally no stripe there to tell you where the road is. In other words, if you're driving on the lane and the lane has an exit or not, and the marking stops because the marking doesn't go across the exit ramp. So I find that our vehicle gets a little confused by that. At least I think it does. So I don't, you know, I'm always on. I love to drive. It's not a chore for me anyway. So I love it. I love the getting out on the road. But I do find that that's one of the things that that's very interesting. And, of course, as I mentioned, it doesn't recognize red lights unless there's a car already stopped there. So it's interesting to see the advances that are coming that are taking place. Do you have a feel, Mark, for how this is going to be phased in? Now, do you have a sense that Uber will go back to using these automated vehicles, or what do you think is going to happen? Pull out your crystal ball.
Well, if I had to predict, I would say Uber will likely resume testing. They've spent a lot of money on this technology, and in short order, they've racked up about 3 million miles of on-road testing. And they've been increasing their on-road testing at a much more rapid rate than some of the more established players, namely Waymo, have been doing, which still Waymo, I believe, has a little over 5 million miles of on-road testing to date. But Uber started much later at this than Google did, now Waymo for their self-driving car project. But I do think that they're right now, though, that they're going to be doing a lot of closed track testing and virtual simulations in order to work out any of these issues that may have caused this fatal crash before they return to the roads. They're also going to have to demonstrate to regulators in states that they have done or rather taken appropriate measures to fix whatever problems may exist.
Okay, now, you had told me before we went on the air that Uber has its own software that it uses. It's not something that's produced by anyone else. Could that have been where the failure happened? Is that where the failure likely happened?
Most likely. One of the suppliers of a major sensor that Uber uses, a company called Velodyne, which made the LiDAR array that sits at the top of the car. And LiDAR is basically it's a laser ranging technology. It looks like a little cylinder that spins around on top of the car and is supposed to 3D map the environment in real time. That sensor, according to the company, was functional. So it appears that the Uber vehicle had radar on it that also should have detected the victim. So Something most likely went wrong with the software. Either it didn't somehow the detection from the sensor didn't end up in the software, or that it improperly classified the victim, or that it failed to accurately predict her movement, which is another thing that these self-driving software systems are supposed to do. So it appears most likely that this is a software failure rather than a hardware failure, and the test driver most likely would have been notified if there had been a hardware failure and would have taken control. So if I had to guess, this is a software problem.
Okay, so it failed to recognize the woman when she came within its path. Now, and you mentioned it has to account for the speed at which the person is moving. So if you were driving down the road and a deer ran out in front of you, that would be totally different from a person because they'd be moving at a much greater speed. So how far out do these systems detect movement that's likely going to come into their path?
So usually a few dozen meters, they should have been able to see her, and then also start classifying and then trying to predict her movement. Your example of a deer jumping immediately in front of someone's headlights as the car's moving at 50 miles an hour, say on a rural road, is a good example of what some of this technology may not be able to prevent in the future, an accident like that. But in this case, the woman was standing on a median, which wasn't very well lighted, but had started to cross into the street well before moving into the path of the Uber test vehicle. So various sensors should have detected her approaching the vehicle from a perpendicular angle and responded accordingly, but that did not occur.
It did not happen. Well, this time is flying by, Mark. Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Mark Scribner. He is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and he focuses on transportation regulation, and we're talking about automated vehicles and their future. Let me ask you a question here. One of the things that I've wondered about is, are the more advanced cars able to recognize that there are curves in the road and they're going to slow down accordingly? Now, in our vehicle, and as I said, it's old, you set it at a speed and it will adjust itself to staying a certain distance behind the vehicle in front of it. If that vehicle slows down, it slows down. But when you're traveling on a curvy road and there's no one in front of you, our vehicle doesn't have enough intelligence, sorry car, don't mean to insult you, to recognize that it needs to slow down because there's a curve ahead. What about the new technology? Is that going to be, I would think it would have to be incorporated.
Yes, the new technology does account for things like that. So your adaptive cruise control in your car is what's known as a level one automation system. And those, certainly the driver assistance systems certainly can provide benefits to people. But we're talking about the more advanced systems.
Right.
Aim not to assist the driver, but to take the driver out of the equation. And that's because about 19 out of 20 crashes, it's the driver who makes some error or misbehaves that causes the crash. So the ultimate goal is to take the driver out of the equation. What the auto companies, when they were opposing Ralph Nader's initial calls for national auto regulation, used to refer to as the loose nut behind the wheel, as opposed to something being wrong with the car's technology. Here we're entering a new era where the car's technology will be front and center. The drivers, you know, we've recognized that drivers are in fact driving the crashes that occur on the road, and the way to reduce that There are a number of things you can do, but the way to do that, at least from a vehicle point of view, is to reduce the responsibility of the driver, ultimately alleviating the responsibility completely and having a computer direct this. So, yes, they will be able to handle those kinds of curves. Now, there's a question of, on certain blind curves, if you go at the speed limit, even the posted speed limit, that may not give you enough time to stop in order to avert a crash, say if there's a hidden driveway or something like that. And there's talks about new types of communication technology, wireless communications between vehicles that could augment a sensor-based self-driving system. Yes, those the more advanced cars, which are generally at they're shooting for level 3 and now up to level 4 automation, those will be able to handle those types of situations.
Are any of those cars on the market now?
None of them are on the market. You do see Waymo, again, that's the former Google self-driving car project, a company, a subsidiary of the parent Alphabet. They are aiming to commercialize this in the very near future, but not by selling these vehicles. Instead, they will operate more like a taxi service. And I think that that's where you're going to see a lot of the early deployment of this. You won't be able to buy the most advanced self-driving car from a dealership, in part because these companies that are developing these vehicles want to know every little thing about them and to correct the problems as they occur, which you can't do as much as soon as you start releasing these to the consumer market. So I expect it's probably going to be several years after we have the initial deployment of fleet vehicles as, say, a taxi-style service before we're going to see any consumer models available in dealerships.
Well, that's okay. I don't mind. I like my level one vehicle. The thing that I find that is so absolutely fabulous about it is that if I'm in a lot of traffic, it just drives, and I don't have to keep putting my foot on the brake and the gas. It's absolutely awesome. So that, to me, is the greatest development of all, especially in this area where we've got a lot of traffic. So you can set it, and it will keep up with traffic, and it's just it works great. So I am a proponent, and I think it's very exciting, the things that are going on, and I just hope that we can get all the kinks ironed out. But so it's going to be down the road a ways before we see these cars on the market. Well, first off, the developers, I'm sure, want to reclaim some of the money and by developing their own car, their own systems, and I would think that would monetize it a little bit better. But now tell me, is the predictions for more death and destruction, I'm not trying to be too awful here, but that's because of drivers' lack of attention, alcohol, drugs, other components that come into it that won't affect a system, a computer?
Right. A computer that is properly programmed isn't going to be drunk, and it's not going to be speeding. And those are two of the biggest factors that cause crashes in America today. Now, when I say that cracking down on these types of on-road testing experiments would lead to more death and destruction, I'm not saying that absolutely the vehicle crash rate is going to be increasing. What I'm saying is that it's likely going to stay the same. And we're going to be foregoing the potential benefits of this technology, which if you've got about 94% of vehicle crashes today, the primary result of human error and misbehavior, if you're not addressing that and you're letting the status quo play out, that just means that you're going to have a bunch of otherwise preventable crashes, injuries, fatalities, property damage that you wouldn't otherwise have if you had allowed the technology to be deployed that could reduce those crash rates.
Well, I like that because so many people die in accidents every year. It's really kind of frightening. And it would be wonderful if there's technology out there that can help reduce those deaths. Well, Mark, it's been fascinating. And I'm rooting for the development of these cars. I think it's very exciting. As I said, I'm an addict. I love to get behind the wheel. So, and I don't speed that much. I'm pretty good about that. So anyway, but thank you so much for being with us. You have been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Mark Scribner. He's a senior fellow with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and his focus is on transportation regulation. Again, Mark, thank you so much. And this is Shirley Rooker right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WJLA 7 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.
Springtime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
Garnishing your ham with pineapple? Pair it with a delicious Chardonnay to make their taste buds swirl.
Deviled eggs are even better when paired with a light, dry wine like a bubbly Prosecco or a Pinot Grigio.
For me, nothing beats recommending a great wine. And with such an extensive selection, I can help you find the perfect one in your budget.
Whether you're hosting or just bringing the wine, we love to share our always low prices and ridiculous selection this spring at Total Wine & More. Cheers!
ADT can design and install a smart home just for you, backed by 24/7 protection. A new smart home at your service, customized for your lifestyle. Set up custom automations unique to your home to automatically do the things like lock the doors or set the thermostat when you leave. Even close your garage door from virtually anywhere. ADT will set up your home with multiple smart home devices and security features like indoor and outdoor cameras, locks, lights, and garage door control, even video doorbells. Visit ADT.com/podcasts to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.